ラベッドバーデラベッドバーベッドバーデラベッドバーデラベッドバーデラベッドバー DENNAVD DOVN デラベッドバーデラベッドバーデラベッドバーあ、yeah.
Today's we have a huge guest from the Australia, the basketball writer from the pick and roll, the Jacob too. Thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I was very glad that we got to meet at the World Cup in Japan, and I'm excited to be on the podcast now.
Yes, yes. Actually, we know each other before the World Cup. Actually, we send an email each other, and we have promised to meet in the Okinawa, and we also record some podcasts in Okinawa, but I couldn't make it, so that's why that we try to do this in the online. But I'm so happy to be able to have an opportunity. So as I said, I do this podcast for, I think, the 3 years or something like that. And basically, I do this podcast in the Japanese and with my friends, and always talking about. I'm a huge fan of Delhi, so the information around Matthew Davidova, and of course, talk about the Aussie hoops, and that's why I invite you. And recently, I'm going to make this podcast more the international content. So I'm going to try to invite some the people from the outside of Japan. So that's why I'm trying to do this. So the first question from me, that you're the basketball writer of the Pick and Roll, and when did you start your career as a basketball writer, and what brought you here?
So I started as a basketball writer and with the Pick and Roll, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago. And it was really because when I was going through school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I wanted to do for a job or anything like that. So I liked sports and I liked writing. They were the two things that I felt like I enjoyed. So I went to university, studied sports journalism without much of a plan still. And then when I finished at university, there was probably 2 years where I couldn't find any work, and it was a hard thing to break into. And then I found the Pick and Roll, and they were looking for volunteers and writers to come on board, and I was lucky enough to be invited to be part of the team. And since then, the Pick and Roll's kind of gotten a lot bigger, and I've been able to go along on that journey as well. So it's it was a lot of luck, I think, as well as some hard work, but it's all worked out well.
Yeah. How often do you write your article in the Pick and Roll? Is it once a week or something like that?
Once every 2 weeks. Yeah, so it's it's good. It's sort of enough time to see what happens in the NBL and in other games, and figure out what the talking points are. So it's good.
I feel the. Of course, I have read your article in the Pick and Roll. Of course, the. About the World Cup or the Boomers or something like that. Always your article is very precisely and it's very good quality, I think. It is very...
I appreciate that.
Good to read, and it's very enough information and so enjoyable. So, yeah. Okay, so you do another job as well?
Yes. Yeah, so I work in media and communications for AFL Tasmania, which is Australian rules football.
It
runs all the competitions locally. So I do social media and videos and things like that for football. So still more sports, but it's nice to have a couple of different ones.
Okay. So are you do you enjoy the basketball by yourself? Were you a basketball player?
Yes. Yeah, I I still play basketball now, but at a very low level. I really only got into basketball because I was tall when I was younger, and so everyone always told me that I should play. So I was never particularly good at it. But that's why being a basketball writer is good, because I can still go and enjoy games without having to be any good at playing. It works out well.
Okay. And so we actually met in Okinawa, and what was your daily schedule like in Okinawa as a writer or a media person?
It was busy. While the Boomers were still in the tournament in Okinawa, it would sort of be on a game day, you'd get there early and set up and stay until probably an hour or two after the game to go to press conferences and do any interviews. And then by the time I finished writing, it would be, 1 o'clock in the morning maybe. And then the next day, get up and go to practice in case there are any players available for interviews there as well. And so there weren't really too many days off. It was sort of writing an article every day and talking to people every day and watching games. So it was busy. It was my first time working at a major tournament, and it was a lot busier than I expected.
Mm-hmm. So could you watch inside of the practice as well?
Yes. So media, you could normally get in for the last 10 minutes of practice to watch, and then the team would make a player or a coach available for interviews afterwards as well, normally. So after one practice, Paddy Mills came out and would talk to us about the game they had coming up the next day, or one of the assistant coaches would come, which was really good. It's not something I'm used to having that kind of access. So it's really cool to be able to talk to people right after or right before a game and see what they're thinking.
So do you have any the most impressive moment as a media person in this tournament?
I think it's just sort of the little things for me, like watching the Boomers play and then going to the press conference, and you're sitting sort of within 10 meters of someone like Luka Doncic after they played Slovenia. Someone that you just watch on TV, or Paddy Mills, who I've watched for sort of 10, 15 years, and just off camera here, I've got a picture of him up on my wall. So it's cool to be able to sit so close to these people and then ask them questions and talk to them like that. So it's very, very lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah. Actually, I have watched the press conference in the YouTube or something like that, and I can hear your voice, your question, and it is very, I feel that it was very good moment for you, I think.
So it's strange for me when I go and listen back to those press conferences to write my articles, and I'm not used to hearing my own voice in them, so it's a little bit strange for me as well.
Yeah. Is there I think the full media person, mainly from the Australia, like you and Ogun and Matt.
It was Tom Hirsch from NBL
that's
Media.
Right, that's right.
The other main one. Yeah. So it was good having sort of the four Australians there. And I had only met Tom before. I hadn't met the others until I got to Okinawa. But when you're all sort of working on the same schedule and going to the same games, you get to know them pretty quickly. And it was good having so many people there that were sort of doing the same job and all working together.
Mm-hmm. Was this your first time to meet them?
Yes. Yeah, so Tom I'd met once before when the Boomers were in the World Cup qualifying, and and we were both covering a game in Melbourne, but Olgan and Matt I'd never met before. I'd read all of their work for quite a while. So it's again, it was good, kind of cool to see them working as they do and meet them. But so I've sort of come away with some new contacts, which is good.
Mm-hmm. How was Okinawa? After Okinawa, you've been to the Philippines, the Manila for the tournament phase. And how do you feel about Okinawa for as a place for the basketball tournament?
It was great. It was really good. After going to Manila afterwards, I appreciated Okinawa even more because it was just so much quieter. It was nice and relaxed, you know, not too much traffic, good fresh air near the beach. So I was a little bit disappointed I didn't have much of a chance to look around Okinawa and see more.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was sort of just going to basketball games every day. But it was great. And especially because where I'm from in Australia, it's always very cold. So I enjoyed getting some sun and some warm weather finally. So it was it was fantastic. I loved it.
How do you feel about the arena of the Okinawa? I think it is a little bit small. Do you think so?
Yeah, it's it wasn't maybe as big as I was expecting, but I thought it was really good that you could still get maybe 8,000 people in there, and everyone's right on top of the action. So
yes.
For those when Japan was playing, the crowd maybe wasn't the biggest, but the noise was just crazy. Oh. The atmosphere and the fans were going crazy. So it was really cool. It was probably the best atmosphere for a basketball game that I've ever seen was when Japan was sort of making some of those runs in their game against Finland, and when they ended up winning that game, it was crazy. So I really liked watching games in Okinawa. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, actually the Australia also the play against Japan. And I've joined as a Boomers fan, even though that there is a Japanese game. But it was very tough atmosphere, like the as a fans of the opponents of the Japan, I think.
The fans made it hard for every other team that had to play against them. And even the Boomers, sort of, there were moments there where Japan would make a bit of a run and the fans would start really getting excited and making a lot of noise, and you thought that maybe they had a chance to come back and challenge in that game. But it must have been kind of fun for you being able to watch the Boomers, who you're a fan of, against Japan, who I'm sure you've seen a lot of as well.
Are you going to the US or the other country to watch the basketball as a fan?
I have been to the US once to watch the NBA. That was quite a while ago now. That would have been probably 7 years ago, I think. So other than that, I haven't really traveled anywhere to watch basketball outside of Australia. But I'm a Lakers fan in the NBA, and I went and watched Kobe Bryant's last season before he retired. So yeah, so that was before I was writing about basketball or anything like that. So that kind of made me want to be a basketball writer even more, going and seeing those games. So I'm hoping I'll be able to travel a bit more and work and write and cover games.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay, so next I wanna talk about this Boomers campaign, and straight to say, what do you think about the result of this Boomers campaign, and how do you think what can we bring from this result of the World Cup?
It was an interesting tournament. I think it was a disappointing result given how much talent there was on the team, and there were so many, you know, really high level NBA players there. But I think at the same time, with so many new players coming in, maybe we should have expected it to be a difficult tournament. So I think there are a lot of people that were very upset about how the Boomers did. And I think they should be, but I think there were some positives to come out of it as well. We've introduced a lot of new players, a lot of young players, who are going to be a big part of the team moving forward. And so I think they didn't quite come together in time for this World Cup. They weren't quite gelling as a team. But I think moving forward, hopefully they can use the experience from the World Cup and maybe learn from that and get better.
Yeah, As you said, this time we have a lot of the new face for the boomers. And I want to ask you, is there anything about this boomer squad you didn't expect before the World Cup?
That's a good
question.
Both
is okay. The positive side or the negative side of both is okay. But
I think I was surprised with the players they picked that they struggled defensively so much. I think there are a lot of good defenders in the team that they picked, and it kind of we've gotten used to that being a strength for the Boomers, that they're really good defensively, and there were times in the tournament that they really struggled to stop other teams from scoring, especially against Germany and Slovenia when they lost those games. So I probably expected a team that had, you know, Josh Green and Xavier Cooks and some of these other really good defensive players to be better on that side. But again, I think that was just a lack of familiarity and the coaches trying to change the way that they're playing at fairly short notice. In terms of a positive surprise, I would say that Xavier Cooks was probably the big one for me. I think he showed that he's able to play for the Boomers in really high level games, and obviously watching him play in the NBL, we sort of know that he's a very good player, and he's now in the NBA as well. But to be able to see him play for the Boomers at a World Cup and really do everything at a very high level was exciting, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I also surprised about Xavier Cooks. Actually, I know that he has a great reputation inside of Australia, but always we don't know, we are not sure about the international game or the NBA or something like that. So yeah, he has proved himself, I think. Yeah,
and he does have a bit of a weird lot of skills in that he doesn't shoot the ball very well, and he's maybe not big enough to be a center. And I think that's probably why it's taken him so long to get to the NBA, because people had those questions. But it's good to see that he can answer them at the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And after the World Cup, the fans of the Boomers, everybody started to talk about the Paris Olympic Games, because we have after a year, we have another major tournament. So if you're the head coach of the Boomers, who will you take to Paris?
Yeah, it's not very long before Paris. That's going to come up very quickly. So these are the kind of decisions that the Boomers are going to have to make fairly soon. The biggest change, obviously, would be hopefully Jock Landau will be there and will be healthy. Mm-hmm. I think if he was there at the World Cup, that would have made a massive difference for the Boomers. And maybe they still wouldn't have won a medal, but I think they would have made it at least to the quarterfinals and maybe a little bit further than that. So I think if you add him in, that helps a lot.
Ben
Simmons is the other big name that people have talked about. So if he's available, I think, if he's available and he's sort of back to his best, I think he would probably have to come into the team, and someone else might have to make way for him, because he can sort of do everything that the team needs. He can defend really well and defend multiple positions and can make plays for other people. So I think I would have to put him in there. But outside of that, it might be a fairly similar squad at the moment. I think if I had to pick it now, there would be a lot of similar players, but there's still a full season of basketball to go before then. So players like DJ Vasiljevic, who is going to play for Washington or try out for Washington, he's the kind of shooter that they might need. Someone like Matthew Dellavedova is looking like he's in as good a shape as he's ever been and playing well. Yeah, he's looking like he's going to have a big NBL season. So if he comes out and has a really good season, I think he has to be considered. So it's going to be an interesting next 9 months, I think, to see who can take advantage of a tournament that didn't go the way they wanted and try and force their way in as someone that can make a difference.
I want to ask you about Ben Simmons. How the rumors try to use him as a he is a tall and he has an ability to be a good defender as well, the good rebounder, I think. So the we have the two choices, using him as a point guard or the more the player played in the inside. How do you think which is good for him as a boomer?
I think in my mind it makes sense to use him as a big, given Josh Giddey is there as the point guard and he'll be playing a lot of minutes moving forwards. And we spoke about Xavier Cooks and the success that he had at the World Cup. I can kind of see Ben Simmons playing a similar role to what Xavier Cooks did in Japan, sort of as that small ball power forward or center who can get a rebound, as you say, come down with the rebound and just push the ball up the floor and make plays happen himself without having to give it to the guards. So I think if you can put him out there with Josh Giddey and have those two playmakers who can feed off each other, I think that could be something really good. And then when Josh Giddey goes to the bench, maybe you can have Ben Simmons play as the point guard and fill his shoes as well. Great. So I think if Ben Simmons is the kind of player that he has been previously before his injuries, I think there's a lot of different things that the Boomers could do with him. And I think that versatility is something that could be really useful in a tournament where you do have to adjust and change things as you go a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Daily One, the shoes changing your basketball life. The soft upper is constructed of Uturai mesh and KPU foam. The heel pod equipped with peak tight foam cushioning. Put on and you too can be the Lavadova. Let's search peak spots now. When did you start to follow the Boomers? How long do you follow Boomers?
I'd say it was probably around about 2010 or so. I always liked sports, but I was I played soccer when I was growing up and cricket and a few other sports. Basketball wasn't really immediately one of my favorite sports. But then around about 2010, the NBA started getting bigger in Australia, so you see bits and pieces from that. And then at about that same time, I think the Boomers, the group of Boomers that has been there for so long now, that was when they were first starting to come through. So, you know, like your Matthew Dellavedovas and your Joe Ingles and some of these players were starting to find their feet. And so that's probably when I started watching the Boomers a little bit more. And Matthew Dellavedova in particular, I sort of latched onto him and watched him when he was playing at St. Mary's in college. And I really hadn't followed college basketball at all at that point, but I made sure to watch all of his games when they're on TV in Australia. And so when he started to come into the national team as well, I sort of felt like there was that little bit of a connection there. And I always wanted to see him do well. So yeah, I think I was becoming a basketball fan at the same time as the Boomers were starting to become a really strong team. And so I think the timing of that has meant that I've sort of really passionately followed them ever since then.
Who is your most favorite Boomer in the Boomers history?
Oh, that's a tough question. I feel like if I say Dellavedova, people are going to think I'm just saying that because of the podcast that I'm on. But I think it'd have to be either him or Patty Mills. I think. I think everyone loved Patty Mills already, but he had that game in the bronze medal game to beat Slovenia and scored 42 points, I think it was impossible for people not to love him in Australia after that. There were a lot of people who I know who weren't basketball fans and they still talk about that game and about Patty Mills. So I think I think it would be Patty Mills, but as I say, I've always had a soft spot for Dele.
Yeah, I think that you sold some of the Japanese, how can I say, Japanese boomers fan in Okinawa, I think, because Patty Mills is quite popular in Japan as well, because he belongs to the Spurs, San Antonio Spurs. Spurs is also the quite popular team, NBA team in Japan, and also the Spurs fans is going to support the Boomers because of the Patty Mills, and also they have Aaron Baines. So yes. Yeah, that's why recently the Boomers have more the talented player and like Josh Giddey or Maki Faibu. So they also have a lot of the fans in Japan, but long time Japanese Boomers fan is I think they're always because of Patty Mills, I think. Yeah,
that's interesting. I wasn't really surprised to see so many Boomers fans, because I know I see you and other people on Twitter who who follow the Boomers from Japan, but I was wondering how that started. Interesting to hear that Spurs connection there. That's good. Because for you supporting the Boomers, was it because of Delhi, or was there something else there?
Because of the I started to follow the Boomers from the 2016 in the Rio Olympic Games. I'm going to the it's something like a time, the same time to advance to the graduate school, and I have some time to watch the basketball game at that time, and I'm interested in NBA, and also they have the Rio Olympic Games at that time, and I have fallen in love with the Boomers because they have players like underdog, like Patty Mills, Joe Ingles, Matty Dellavedova, Andrew Bogut, Aaron Baines. They're not, of course, I know that Bogut is the number one pick of the NBA draft, but they are not so popular and they're not strong in the NBA. But when they gather in, the Boomers is quite strong, and they showed a very beautiful basketball at that tournament. So I was so moved by that Boomer squad, and I feel that especially the Delhi is I feel the most big gap from the NBA. He's a good player in NBA as well, but in the Boomers he was so quality point guard. I think that at that time that he was one of the great international point guards, I think. So that's why I aware that how much that he is good. He's a good player, and also his character and his desire for the national team. So that's why that I was a big fan of him. Yeah, it's almost 7 years ago, but still I was so attracted by him. Yeah,
I like that you use the word underdog there, because that's something that Australians are very proud of, is being an underdog, and when we're not an underdog, we like to support an underdog. So, mm-hmm. And I think Delhi is sort of the perfect player for that, because he's never been particularly highly rated, but he's always gone above what people think he can do. So I think that's sort of what the Boomers have been able to do as well while he's been there. So yeah, we love to support an underdog in Australia, which is why we enjoy, I think, watching Japan get the wins that they did at the World Cup as well. It was
yes.
A similar team that sort of people didn't expect as much from, and then they came out and had some big wins that people weren't expecting. So it's, yeah, it's our favorite thing in Australia when a team can do that.
Yes. For me, when we watch the NBA games, that they have the very great athleticism, and they can jump high, and they can score easily. So it is very tough to learn something from them. But from the daily, I feel that we can learn a lot, even though for our amateur sports, how to defend, how to make a play, how to create a place, and something like that. So that's why it is one of the interesting thing by following him, I think.
He's a lot more relatable for everyday people. He's not super tall, he's not super athletic, but he just works hard and it works for him. So no, you're right. It's a lot easier to watch someone like that and sort of relate to it and enjoy it than maybe some of the crazy athletes that you see playing for Team USA or playing in the NBA.
Yeah. And he's always he's like underrated and always try to overcome the such situation. Like last year, he belongs to the Sacramento Kings as a 15th player, I think. And he battled against Quinn Cook for the third point guard spot. And Avery said Dele cannot get the spot and Quinn Cook is going to be the spot. But he overcomes such a reputation that he got a spot. And always he trying to overcome the such situation and prove himself. I loved him, his life, how can I say it? He's such mentality and everything is great for me.
I was listening to an NBL podcast this morning ahead of the season starting, and on an NBL Overtime, I can't think which of the NBL journalists said it, but I think they said the best thing you can do for Matthew Dellavedova is tell him that he can't do something, because then he'll just go out and make sure he does it just to prove you wrong. So. And that's what's going to happen this NBL season, I think. People have said after he missed the Boomers team that you know, he's past his best, or he's not as good as he used to be. And all of a sudden, he's looking like one of the best guards in the NBL in the preseason. So I think he's just going to prove everyone wrong again, which is going to be good to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. After he missed this Boomer squad, I saw a lot of tweets from the fans of the OC Hoops. They said this is the end of the national career of the Matthew Dellavedova, and they tweeted how much he is great for the national team or something like that. But I was so angry about that. This is not the end of his national career. So it's possibly the next year he missed a game, but he's still going to try to get the spot. So I'll get angry.
I think my first reaction was probably similar to other people that, you know, maybe we won't see him again at a major tournament, but you see him enough times prove people wrong that you can't rule it out. And then seeing how he's playing at the moment, it's not impossible that he would play at the Paris Olympics or you know, at some of those tournaments. So it's silly to rule him out, because he just keeps on making things happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. And I think this is about the Dele still, but I want to talk more detail about him. For coming back to the Boomer squad in the Paris Olympic Games, what does the Dele need to do, and what kind of player does he need to be in this year?
Yeah, so I think the first step he seems like he's already done. I think after having a lot of injuries sort of over the last couple of years, he just needed to get back into his best shape, and he's done that. Mm-hmm. I think people have said that he's more fit than he's ever been. He's sort of as physically strong as he's ever been. So I think that's the first box ticked. And I think the Boomers at the World Cup, the big problem was that they didn't have enough people who could create offense. They didn't have enough people who could who could make a shot for themselves. So there was a lot of times that Josh Giddey or Patty Mills were stuck just dribbling the ball around in circles and the offense didn't go anywhere. So I think if Delhi can stay sort of the elite defender that he's always been and still mm-hmm. be that really strong defender, but also be a shot creator for himself and others, so be able to beat his defender and make a shot for someone, anyone, I think that would be a positive step in the right direction for the Boomers. And again, in the NBL preseason, he's looked really good shooting the ball. He's sort of coming off the dribble and making threes and mm-hmm. showing a lot of confidence in making shots like that. So I think, again, that's a really good step in the right direction, because if he can keep on scoring the ball well and still be the good passer and the good defender that he's always been, that would fill a lot of the holes that the Boomers had on the perimeter. And so I think they'd have to consider bringing him back into the squad.
Yeah. I think these listeners that doesn't know about the NBL has a preseason game in the Gold Coast, and Delhi showed a quite good performance, like 28 points in the first game or something like that. So yeah, that's why we so much expect him to be more the scorer on the creative player. So
Melbourne are actually playing their first game of the regular season as we're recording this, and he's taken 17 shots in the first half. So he's still being aggressive, which is good. Yeah.
17 shots in the first half?
Yeah.
From Gully?
Yeah, he's the little bit that I watched, he was just happy to shoot it every time he got it, which is fun to see. I think we're both fans of his, so it's good to see him sort of just trying to make a lot of plays.
that's crazy. Of course, I was so shocked the result of this Boomer squad, but I at the same time I feel there is still a room for Delhi to join the squad and contribute to this Boomer squad, I believe. So for the Delhi fund, it was shocked, but it was not bad result, I think. And the Delhi also showed that he know what he have to do for this Boomer squad in next year. So that's why he showed such aggressive play, I think. So I think it is going to be the fun season for the Delhi's fans, I think. Yeah.
I think so. He's got a lot to prove to people after missing that Boomers team. So I think he's going to be very motivated and he's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got a lot of the question from the listeners. I need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 8. So if it is okay, please answer that. And from the this is from the Lorenzo. Do you know him?
I don't think so, but I might do. So sorry to Lorenzo
He's my friend, and he's I think a blogger, and he also joined Okinawa and Manila as well. And
I've just made the connection in my head. I haven't met him, but I know him on social media. He goes to a lot of games.
Once I got he made an article about my activity around Matthew Davidova, so that's why we became a friend and we met in Okinawa. So, okay, and he wanna ask you about what teams and players you saw win over interest and the new fans. Did you find local fans in Jakarta, Okinawa, Manila showing interest in teams outside the usual grammar teams?
Yeah, I guess on that second bit, it was cool in Okinawa in particular, seeing some of the more obscure teams, I guess, get some really strong support from mm-hmm. the local crowds. You know, we saw Cape Verde get their first World Cup win, and and their fans were there going crazy and dancing in the streets with the team after the game. But I think it was really cool to see the Japanese fans as well sort of become a part of that celebration and enjoy it, which I think is one of the really cool things about a tournament like the World Cup, is that there's all these teams that you wouldn't normally be able to watch sort of coming together in one place. I think I wasn't in Jakarta, but from what I've heard and what I've seen, it was similar there with teams like Latvia, who they had mm-hmm. their really, really passionate fans, some of the best fans that I saw once I got to the Philippines. And that just kind of draws in all the locals as well. And suddenly Latvia is everyone's second team, and everyone's mm-hmm. cheering for them as well once their country goes out. So it's really cool to see things like that happen. And yeah, on the first part of that question, I guess that happened to me as well, because I did sort of find myself really enjoying watching certain teams and hoping that they'd mm-hmm. do well. And Japan was the first big one, because obviously we were in Japan, and just being mm-hmm. a part of the games where they had that home crowd was a lot of fun. And and there were a few players there I was already familiar with. I'd seen Pese Tominaga do mm-hmm. very well against Australia twice before. I really enjoyed watching him play as well. So it's he was sort of the one that stood out, but that whole team was a lot of fun to watch as well. And then I think once I got to Manila, just seeing some of the European teams that maybe no one expected to do as well as they did, like Italy and Latvia mm-hmm. and Lithuania, just playing really good, solid team basketball. I really enjoyed watching them, and it seemed like the local crowds really sort of got behind them as well, because as we said before, it's different to watching Team USA or Canada, where it's all the really high level athletes that you'd see in the NBA. It's, you know, it's less athletic guys who are just making the right plays. So mm-hmm. I think those sorts of teams are what I gravitate towards, and I think that's what the crowds seem to really enjoy as well.
Yeah, that's great. I think I know the Olympic Games as well, but the World Cup is very difficult tournament to win the medal or the or advance to the tournament phase or something like that. And always it easily happened, it's something like a game about the giant killing.
You always hear players and coaches say that the World Cup's harder to win than the Olympics, just because there's so many more teams, and there's a lot more teams from the places like Europe and the Americas. And we saw that at the World Cup with Australia, obviously, went out in the second round. Spain mm-hmm. went out early, and France went out early. So they're all very good teams, and they struggled to win through to that tournament phase. So it's a hard tournament, but it means that you get to see a lot more different teams as well, which is fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So thank you, Lorenzo. So next is this is from Japanese fan from the Fujitomo-san. And we have some local programs around the Japanese national team game. But do you know about the tickets program around the Japanese national team? Do you know that?
I not particularly. I saw some of the players on Twitter, and I think it was Yuta Watanabe in particular talking about
yes,
sort
that's
of
right.
empty sections in the crowd, and they were quite disappointed with that. So I figured there must have been some sort of issue, but I wasn't too sure exactly what. But it's, yeah, it's disappointing if everyone wants to go to a game and you've got empty seats there.
I think I was also surprised, but when I go to the Okinawa arena, there are a lot of the empty seats, and when we see the online, they said the every seat was sold out. So the Japanese fans going there are a lot of empty spots. The fans also get angry, and also the players and Tom Hovas, head coach of the Japanese national team, also get mad. And what happened, and we have had the seats are all sold out, but there are a lot of empty seats, even though that we are the home team. So I'm not sure about the FIBA or the JBA, Japanese Basketball Association, decide to sell the tickets after that, after the Yuta Watanabe tweeting that. And in the people in the Tokyo or the Kansai or something like that, people is quite difficult to reach out that. But I think the basketball fans in Okinawa is going to buy them. And after the second game is against Finland, I think. In that game, that there are all the Japanese fans in the arena. So it became a good story, and still that we are wondering why they have a empty seat at that time. I think the FIBA or the JBA invites some of the supporter company, the people from the supporter company, I think. So, but they didn't come there, so that's why it happened. So it's a little bit not so long, but it's temporary huge problem around the Japanese basketball. So, and as she said, if you know that, she want to know how did you feel about it? How did you feel about the program?
It's frustrating when you wait so long for an event like the World Cup to come to your country, and then people can't get tickets because some of them are seemingly not for sale, or they're just put aside. So yeah, to be sitting at home and see all those empty seats would be frustrating. It's I mean, it's a similar thing in Australia at the moment. The Australian football final is on this weekend, and there's a lot of fans of the teams who have missed out because so many tickets in the stadium are put aside for sponsors and for businesses and things like that. So there's a lot of fans that miss out, and it's easy to see why, because it is something that people are passionate about, and they want to go and watch their team, and in this case watch their country play. So I think any time you can get more fans into the stadium, you should be doing that. And so I think it was good to see the stadium more full for those later games, but I can see why the players and the fans were so frustrated in those early games with those empty seats, because at a World Cup you want to see the stadium sold out, and you want the team to have as much support as they can. So hopefully that's something that they can fix at the next big tournament.
Does the same thing happen in Manila as well?
Yeah, there were.
They also.
I'm not sure whether it was because tickets weren't available, but the crowds weren't as big as I expected at some of those games. Given they were, you know, quarterfinals, semifinals, like really, really big important games, and they weren't sold out there either. It was a bigger stadium, but I still thought there would be bigger crowds. So maybe there were similar problems, or maybe there was just less fans trying to buy the tickets. But either way, it was surprising that the crowds weren't a little bit bigger.
Yeah, but at the same time, it was very interesting for the Japanese basketball fans the player trying to, how can I say, try to tweet and try to change that situation, and it worked, and yeah. That's a very interesting moment for us.
It's good to have players who are willing to say something and step up like that, because it will work sometimes. So it's nice to have a player like him who is, you know, a very big name and plays in the NBA. So you could
that's right. Yeah,
you could maybe expect him to just sit back and not worry. But it's good that he's someone that's willing to sort of step up and say something and make it change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yuta Watanabe is, of course, he is the best player as a basketball player, but he's always tried to say something like more straight, more than normal Japanese does. I think the Japanese player is very, very quiet and very polite and didn't complain something. And not say a strong word and a straight words, I think. But Yuta Watanabe is a little bit different from that. And he always try to change the situation and try to push the team. So yeah, we have I also feel that we have a great player and a great person for national team, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. That was my experience with all of the people in Okinawa, was that they were very, very polite and didn't want to cause any trouble, but which is a good thing most of the time, but sometimes you need someone who's happy to complain and make someone do something.
Yeah, and also she wanna ask you who is your MVP of this World Cup, and of course or the most impressive player in this World Cup. Yeah, of course we know this MVP of this World Cup is, I think, Dennis Schroeder. But how about from your side?
I think I did vote in the MVP award for the tournament in the end, and. I had to vote before the final, so I voted for Bogdan Bogdanovic. I think it was really going to be whoever won that final. I think it was going to be either Dennis Schroeder for Germany or Bogdanovic for Serbia, and I think Schroeder was the right player given Germany won the final. But the way that Bogdanovic sort of led a Serbian team that was missing Nikola Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
And took them all the way to the final was really impressive, and the way that he did it, he just made it look so easy. He was making all of these really difficult shots, and in an offense that wasn't always flowing all that well, he was still able to make shots and find easy scores when they needed them. So he was very impressive, and for Canada, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander was similar. He
Yeah.
Obviously, we sort of knew he was good going into the tournament, but the way he just sort of glides around the court and two defenders will come at him and he dribbles through them both without really making it look difficult at all. He just made the whole game look so easy. It was a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And then looking at the question as well from the Japanese national team one that I didn't know much about coming in was Yuki Kawamura. I wasn't aware of him before the tournament. There was sort of, as I say, Tominaga and Yudai Baba and a couple of others that we sort of knew about in Australia. But Kawamura in that game against Finland in particular, the way he just took over in the fourth quarter. You know, he was making threes over the top of Lauri Markkanen. He was going to the basket without really any fear at all. He was so much fun to watch. So I really enjoyed him. And I will say as well, Coach Hovas really, really impressed me a lot. He seems like a very good leader and a very smart coach. And I really enjoyed every time I got the chance to listen to him talk. So players were all really impressive the way they took on some of these bigger countries and won. But Coach Hovas seems like a very good leader for the Japanese program to have for a long time.
Did you join the press conference of the Japanese team as well?
A couple of times, yeah. Yeah, so just before they played Australia and just after, I was able to sit in on the Japanese press conference.